What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, and we are on trade deadline eve, which really is a big moment where so much change happens. So many arms get new opportunities. Some guys who might be struggling might be doing better on different teams. And it's a great moment for us to reflect on the season so far and embrace the fact that over the next 2 months, we are likely going to get players performing differently than we've seen. So to talk about those guys, the ones that we expect to maybe seize new opportunities or others who we think are going to fade, who better than Eno Saris of The Athletic? My gosh. Oh, you got him. I did, everyone. He's here right now. Eno.
I am here. Tomorrow is actually going to be a really big day because we've been averaging around 40 trades per deadline for, you know, not counting 2020 for the last 7 years. We are about 14 trades into this deadline. Wow. So we've been like hovering around 25, 30 on the day itself. So 25 on the day itself. It may not, last year was 59 trades at the deadline. And I kind of feel like if we're at 14 right now, we're not going to get there. Mm-hmm. But there should be a late flurry, and at least the rentals will change hands.
Well, I can't wait for that.
So far, it's been
Eno's definitely not doing anything live. I am.
I'm also doing something live.
Yeah, of course. What are you doing tomorrow, Eno?
Unfortunately, we can't visit each other's live thing.
I mean, maybe, I don't know. Like, Spore just disappears for a moment. I disappear for a moment, you know?
Yeah.
You disappear, you know?
DBR, you handle this for a second.
But no, you're going to be doing one of the rates with Rates and Barrels at what time rates tomorrow? The Athletic,
come visit us. We'll be doing a live stream from about an hour before the deadline, so 2 o'clock until 3:15 Eastern.
That is maybe 3:30 p.m. PT, not
Eastern.
ET.
Eastern.
The deadline's at 3 o'clock.
Wait, is it?
I thought it was at 6 o'clock.
Pacific. I'm talking Pacific. I miss out of school often. You know, when we're talking times, like you talk Eastern time at me, and
I have to be consistent now. If I said Pacific time, that will throw you off now.
That's right. So don't listen to that first part. 2 p.m. Pacific time.
Oh my gosh. All right, so 5 p.m. Eastern. Yeah. Check that out. Well, here's the thing, you know, I'll be doing mine with Paul Spore at youtube.com/pitcherlist or playback.tv/pitcherlist starting at 4 p.m. Eastern time, 1 p.m. Pacific.
There you
until
go.
6:15. Okay. So we got an extra hour. Maybe I'll get DVR. Okay. DVR to come by, but no, it's going to be a lot of fun. We do it every year. Paul Spore and I wear suits, and we've been doing that since like 2020 or something like that. 2019. It's going to be great. Tune in. We'll be right there reporting on everything, the quick takes and all. We actually have production this year, thanks to Josh Sperry. We've got some cool looks and everything like that for it. And hopefully we'll have some friends like, you know, maybe DVR, maybe some other people do. We'll see. You heard the news, Eno?
What's that?
Well, last week,
Ryan Hayes.
No. I'm sure that's a hitter. Cardboard cutout. Last week, we gave our dark horse trades, and I gave you one that you were like, come on. Like, where does that come from? He's not even in any trade talks. Why would they trade him? But then here we go. 2 hours ago, Ken Rosenthal on your site, The Athletic, reports, quote, J.P. Sears is drawing interest.
Here I thought it might just be Jeffrey Springs. I love it.
J.P. Sears, that's what I'm telling you. They don't want to pay arbitration. They don't want it.
Yeah.
He's going to the Yankees, Eno. You heard it here first last week. Oh, man, that would be wild.
What was my crazy trade?
It
was like Sonny Gray or what was my crazy
trade? Oh, that trade was the Frankie Montas deal, I think, in 2022.
No, my crazy trade.
Yours. You had Sonny Gray to the Mets. Yeah, you had Gray somewhere.
The Astros.
Yeah, that sounds right. Somewhere. Yeah. So okay. I want to talk about this really quickly because this is part of the whole topic here is these guys that might actually get new opportunities, right? And when you look at the Athletics, there is a guy there that actually is somewhat interesting to me who I think would have the opportunity anyway at this point. It's not Mitch Spence, who I still am going to hold out for having new velocity and suddenly becoming Drew Rasmussen, but It's JT Ginn. Have you watched JT Ginn? Do you have any sort of take on him so far?
Yeah, he's he's not Clay Holmes in the aggregate, but he has a bit of the Clay Holmes sinker because they have the same arm angle and the same amount of sink. So, you know, the Clay Holmes sinker with, I would say, maybe not quite as rounded out a package. He does not have the sweeper that Clay Holmes has. He's not really throwing a four seamer, but maybe the same upside as the Clay Holmes, you know, in that he's got sinker, slider, cutter, pretty good command. I like him some. I think he's a major league starting pitcher. Whether or not you're going to brave him in Sacramento is a question.
Yeah, that is tough. What I do like about JT Ginn is that we have seen the velocity on the sinker rise back up to 95. It was at the very beginning of the year, then it fell down a bit. They went in the IL and he's come back. And it's 95 with good sink. 2 inches of vert is who. When I see under five, I'm like, oh, okay. I see that little four guy. That's good. Two. Now we're talking with that velocity on that sinker, and you pair that with a slider that has missed bats in the past. So then you have that righty approach that we've seen so many times that you should be able to get right-handers out decently well. It really just comes down to, okay, what are the other ones doing, right?
What's the plan against lefties? You know?
Yeah. And that's the one I don't know yet. His last start was against Houston, which doesn't help because it's all righties. It's just all righties there. So the changeup has had moments. It's something to monitor there, but I am just curious about it. I will always have a soft spot for a legit sinker baller who can command it and throw it at 95 plus. Right, it's me and Jack Kahanowitz last year. I was like, I don't care. He's going 6 innings, 200 runs, whatever. He's doing that. Spotting sinker is the jack of one trade, who now is the jack of no trade, unfortunately, because he lost that pitch. But JT Ginn is an interesting name, at least for your quality start leagues, deep AL onlys. Mitch Spence, unfortunately, is not doing it. Osvaldo Bidot, are we expecting him to be something this year?
No, again? I do have a second name, but it is not. Do not say that name. I do not want to hear Bidot's name anymore. I'm done with it. I got burned.
You were waiting for Bidot, and it didn't work out.
It didn't work. It's burned me so hard that I'm like, you know, maybe I'll finally learn the lesson about command.
Well, that's interesting though. I mean, it burned you, but it didn't really burn you. Like
I knew it wasn't much on
it. So like it didn't work out this time. It's not necessarily a lesson to avoid, right?
But, you know, also when you have as many leagues as I do or as other people do, I think the other sort of secondary lesson can be that, like, yes, you may like Bidot for cheap, but don't buy 10 shares of Bidot for cheap. Yeah, try some other names in case that one doesn't work out. In Oakland, and I do think that there's going to be some change there. I don't think that teams will pay freight for Luis Severino. Jeffrey Springs is cheap enough and Sears is cheap enough that I think that those two could go. The other name that I'm just waiting for, they've said that he might start, is Jack Perkins.
Perkins
is, I just said I'd learned my lesson about command. Perkins does not have great command, but he does not, I don't think, have like Joe Boyle, Osvaldo Bidoian kind of command. I think it's just
Bidoian. I like that.
Just sort of run-of-the-mill bad command. And he does something that's kind of interesting. His fastball would be entirely dead zone, except that he cuts it 3 inches more than people expect.
Yeah, that is really interesting. I think it's because of the lower arm angle, right?
Yeah, so he doesn't have great IVB, and I looked over at Alex Chamberlain's thing, and he has 0.1 vert over dead zone, right? So he has with a 14 inch or 15 inch IVB, he's basically dead zone in terms of vertical. And I hadn't seen this before, but he has -3 horizontally.
Yeah.
So really they see the arm slot and they expect it to be one of those no vert two, like, you know, yeah, two seamer. They expect to see a lot of two seam movement and they don't get that. So it's almost like a cut forcing, like a cut ride, maybe, except from a low slot. Stuff Plus loves it. And it does come with 96 miles an hour. And the sweeper is 87 miles an hour. So good velo, 90 mile an hour changeup that Stuff Plus really likes. So it's a four pitch, five, maybe even a five pitch mix. Maybe he uses the curve more as a starter. I mean, it's a starter's arsenal, and I think it has the opportunity to miss more bats than Ginz. But both of them are pretty interesting, and they might be good enough for the A's to think, hey, we can make a move here.
Yeah, yeah, he really is interesting. So I remember writing him off before because it was 6.3 extension, 14 vert, and the flat attack angle is interesting. 1.4 high adjusted VAA. Is he going to be able to locate that upstairs enough to do it? The cutter with that has been very effective as a strike pitch, and it's 2 miles per hour slower. However,
it plays them off each other. He throws them in similar locations.
Extra cut, right? With, yeah, like 5 inches extra drop or so, but really that cut is what's doing the damage, and that will work against lefties. That will certainly surprise them if they are expecting the four seamer and then it comes even further in at 2 miles per hour slower. Like, that's just not going to, it's not enough of a difference for them to really know which one is coming. So that sounds fun. And then it's about, okay, cool. Is that sweeper going to be that 22% swing strike rate pitch that it has so far? I hope so. But yeah, you're making me much more interested in Jack Perkins with that comment about the horizontal. Cause I was really thinking, like, this doesn't seem that good of a four seamer at heart.
Yeah. It seems like a dead zone.
Right.
But it's a little bit like Schwellenbach where he cuts it a little bit. Sure. I mean, one other thing that just philosophically, and I wonder if this is true. I like when I look at a movement profile thing and there's kind of four quadrants, you know, that they cover a lot of space. I know that Absolutely. This was researched a little bit by Baseball Prospectus when they talked about their arsenal stats. One of them was like, basically, you know, how different is your movement from pitch to pitch? One thing that I will have to add is, like, we did try metrics like that in our model and it didn't make it more predictive, but that does not mean that, that they're not worth anything. And that also that we can't improve them. And then lastly, I think sometimes when we talk about what's predictive in these models, we lump all pitchers together. And so we're offering too much power to relievers, where I could see it not mattering to a reliever how wide your arsenal was. If you just threw 91, you know, you'd just be like a kind of a crappy reliever, but like,
yeah, sure.
So I kind of sometimes want to like take our models and split out starters and see if we can find some more pressing results. Yeah,
this is, I think about that a lot with, I just want, like, for example, our rankings and percentiles on pitcher list are not qualified. It is actually, they're done differently based if you're a reliever, if you're a starter, and if you're in for your hitter, we have a difference. So it's top 300.
Five is not average for all pitches. It's five. Like, if you look at
what we do is if you're a starter, we take the top 200 pitchers, starting pitchers by innings pitched, and they are the pool. And then it's like for relievers, it's 350 in innings. And then it's for hitters, it's 350 in plate appearances. Mm-hmm. Because the way we think about it is when we're actually trying to compare to the generalized player, those are the ones that actually are what we're thinking about, not like the rare couple inning guy that gets sent down or something like that, or that's just not really the average pool, right? So that also helps for, you know, for fantasy purposes, like, cool, you have five starters a team, or so that's 180 guys, and then you have a couple other periphery ones, so fine. There's your 200. And it gives you a sense inside the scope of it of like, all right, this is a good fastball, this isn't. We're not looking at relievers, just like among starters, this is what this is, right? And I think about that a lot with like PLV modeling too. It's like, I don't quite care about everyone, right? I care about the select like 200 or so. And that, because you have a certain skill set that's kind of expected, like you anticipate you're at a certain threshold to be inside of the top 200 or whatever. Mm-hmm. That means that there might be things that, as you're talking about, that apply or don't, you know, are predictive to the ones beneath it because it's more chaotic and noisy, that actually do separate the wheat from the chaff at the higher echelon.
Right. Like, yeah, as fantasy players, we only care about the top X percent. And, you know, and then on top of that, like, there are some findings that we found that kind of speak to this. Like, for example, we found that Location Plus wasn't that sticky of a year. However, if you cut off the bottom sort of quarter, the mm-hmm. the most erratic locators, the rest of them were fairly sticky year to year. Suggesting that people sometimes, maybe the really bad locators aren't in the league again the next year, you know, or that really bad location may be related to like injury or something, you know. That's sort of my theory. And then the other part, I just did this on Fangraphs. You can do like league average. I did league average location plus as RP 98 for the season, as SP 101. So
because relievers are failed starters.
Mean.
No, it's like, you know, this is the thing that they say in football. Why is he a cornerback? Because he couldn't be a wide receiver. You know, it's a
yeah.
Sorry, so, I said the F word. I'm sorry, guys. I apologize. I just know things.
But anyway, yeah. So we have to know that on some level, location matters to whether or not you are a starter at the very least. You know,
absolutely.
So, yeah, and Perkins may be on that line. He has an 84, which is pretty bad. But but you look at the walk rates in the minors, and they were only around 10-11%. So maybe he has good enough stuff just to attack the zone. And staying in
so
the middle zone.
I appreciate Eno bringing it back, by the way. We went down. Oh my gosh. I was like, where am I? And here we go. Back to Perkins here. So we actually just saw a trade happen as we were talking right now. I don't know if you saw it. It was Tyler Rogers going to the Mets. And the Mets sending over, the name that matters to me is Blake Tidwell. Yeah. So why are you making that noise? You know,
I just did not expect them to trade a name that I even knew. You know, when you're talking about like trading for a reliever, like, you know, like I just didn't expect them to trade a reliever that I knew, you know.
I mean, I felt that way last year with like the Padres dealing with like Dylan Lesko and Drew Thorpe. I'm like, I know these guys.
Tidwell has not had great results in the minors. Yeah. He's not had great results in the minors, but my model likes him.
So, I mean, I can see how Tidwell works. He was one of those guys that, I mean, he throws generally hard and it should be an effective four seamer. I believe if I got this right, changeup and slider is other two. And it just kind of looked like, all right, are you getting the separation from them? Because when I saw him in the majors, I didn't like how he was commanding them and made him more hittable than he should be. But there is a foundation of a good pitcher there in Tidwell. Better than another Mets starter I saw come up this year. I was just, no, thank you.
Who was it? McLean or Sprout?
No, he didn't come up yet. No, someone who actually made their debut with the Mets. I'm just like, yeah, this guy, whatever.
He had bad command. I know you're taking him. Oh my God.
I don't remember who it was, but I could see that working on the Giants, who, I mean, they lost, they traded away Kyle Harrison. I mean, I watched Wizen Hunt and Seymour, and I'm just like, absolutely not. This is a perfect example of just like, maybe Seymour, he does throw harder than Wizen Hunt, but Wizen Hunt is just, you have to be crafty. You're like, this is your rookie year. You are not crafty enough yet to go 91 or so with this changeup and slider. Like, there's got to be more that happens here. And Tidwell, I could definitely see jumping up, not this year, but somewhat soon next year as a legitimate option out of camp, unless something changes, of course, in the offseason. Or
I think he may just slot in as the fifth starter right now, because what I know about the Giants deadline is that they're in the weird position of being kind of a mediocre team that is still in the mix. They're at 500. So, you know, how many games out are they of the playoffs right now?
Too many. You know.
What is it? So they're the Cubs, Mets, Padres are the worst. So they're 5 games out of the Padres. Right. Okay. And so 5 games out of the playoffs, but I was just there on a Tuesday night, and the Pirates were in town and they were sold out. So there's energy after the Rafael Devers trade, and they want to continue building, and they don't want to sell completely. And so that's why there'd been some rumors that Camilo Duvall would be leaving town. But the other rumor that I've been hearing is that they wanted to buy starting pitching. And they wanted, I thought they might just go get a rental, like go get an Andrew Haney. And maybe they will still do that, you know, where they just get a competent veteran that doesn't cost them anything. And Tidwell is someone they put in the minors, and they have some coaching plan they have in place for him, and they're ready to use him. But actually, this could do both things that I said they would do in one trade, where they just trade away a reliever and they get back the starting pitcher that they need for the rotation. And they need one right now, because I don't think Carson Wisenhunt is a major league pitcher right now.
No,
a major league starting pitcher. The problem for me is not so much the changeup, but it's that the sinker, he only has a sinker. So as a lefty, he's throwing a sinker out there. And he doesn't have like a hard weapon against against righties.
Man, I completely forgot. I mean, that Landon Roop is on the IL, that it was, it, I mean, essentially it was Roop and Harrison and Birdsong all fighting for the same rotation spot for a long time. And all of them are removed.
Yeah. So there's actually, you know, suddenly Biden a need.
And Carson Wisenhunt are expected Saturday and Sunday. You got to think Blade Tidwell goes in until
the
trade.
Because Bivens is like, is fine, but he's not like an actual starting pitcher. Wisenhunt, like what, like, do you have a comp for a sinker changeup lefty in the big leagues?
Martin Perez.
Oh, there you go. Which, what, when did Martin Perez's career get better? When he had the cutter.
Right. Oh gosh. I mean, how many years ago?
That was a long time ago, but it was the cutter, right?
Right. I mean, like Ranger Suarez comes to mind, Christopher Sanchez, of course.
But Ranger Suarez throws a four seam sometimes.
Yeah.
And he has a cutter.
Oh, right. I mean, he's got the
You're answering my question still. Like they're, that's what they are at their core. They're sinker changeup guys. Sanchez is a sinker changeup guy. But Sanchez's sinker changeup, it's like Strider-esque, where they're just so good.
Yeah.
That, you know, maybe it doesn't matter. Like Wisenhunt doesn't throw.
Your sinker is great, but can you try not to throw it down the pipe? Yeah. I mean, it's so shocking to me.
Are you complaining about Christopher Sanchez's season? Come on now.
I'm not. I'm just, well, okay, Wisenhunt, we'll say like this.
92.5.
He would be. So that's among the others in fantasy land if it weren't for his Hipper 9 being so high. And I do feel like that is going to make him not stay at this level, is because he allows just far too many hits off of that sinker. And it's because he doesn't go at the edges. He just like, here you go, here you go. And I'm just like, you can afford this. You can afford to try to get the edges more, especially against right-handers. I don't know. It's something that always seems so odd to me. He's like I think he has like the highest zone rate on sinkers this year. I don't know. Probably not. It's just the thing that just like, come on, man. You could be among all the other ones and stay there. Because that changeup is just so good. But yeah. Anyway, he's been incredible. I'm so happy the forearm injury didn't mess him up. Blade Tidwell.
Well, wait,
are you picking him up?
I want to test it. I want to test this now.
You're going to test now the sinker stuff?
Yeah. Sinkers in the zone.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. Guess who's number one?
Okay. Hold on. Framber Valdez. No.
Tyler Rogers.
Not relievers. I know, he's out of here.
He came all the way around. Oh, gosh. He is too high in the zone. I'm going to do minimum results 500.
That wait. Like, what do you mean too high in the zone? What, say more.
Oh, 500 is too high of a thing because there's only four of them that did it. Okay. So 250 minimum results. Christopher Sanchez is 12th. But however, there is not a single starter ahead of him on the list.
Okay.
Adrian Houser.
And also,
is
I imagine he throws the highest percentage
with him.
Yeah. Like he only has that.
So, you know? Adrian Houser, Christopher Sanchez, Jose Quintana, Framber.
Framber was the one that I said there. Houser makes a ton of sense. Quintana, I'm actually a little surprised then, but okay.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't click one thing. Hold on. It needs to be of that pitch type.
Oh, just in general, that was zone rate.
That was, you know. Okay, no. Framber throws more in the zone. Framber is 64% in the zone.
Okay,
Sandy Alcantara is 64%. Brandon Pfaadt is 66%. Is 67%.
That's another conversation. Why has Brandon Pfaadt decided, hey, I'm going to throw sinkers instead of his four-seamer now? That makes no sense to me.
That's when he got good. But I mean, I don't is he gonna, is he throwing him against lefties too? That's the problem.
I mean, he's not, he's like really moved away from the four seamer. He just got trounced for 7 runs yesterday. And I can't,
he's not on my list of guys I want to pick up because they're gonna have better second half.
He's on it?
No, he's not.
Oh, okay. Well, we're gonna explore this though with
just to finish off the Giants.
Yes.
So I think Roop is going to come back. I think Roop is in fantasy. I think he's a fine guy that you stream at home. And that if when Roop is back, that gives them one spot. I like Carson Seymour. He's a Clay Holmes clone. And if they just wanted to just do Seymour Bivens and like figure it out every fifth day, I could see them doing that. So I would say the chances Tidwell slots right into the rotation, I'd say it's about 50-50.
All right. I would vote for you for president the way that you're giving like the thumb. You're doing the, yeah, vote for me.
Also, the last interesting thing about this trade is,
yes,
Tyler Rogers has intriguing stuff. And, you know, our Stuff Plus model loves him, 127 Stuff Plus. But one thing I've noticed is that in division, the people that see him the most hit him the best.
Oh, that's interesting.
And he doesn't miss bats, so he's very much a guy that you want to maybe bring on with people on base and try to get a squibber and get a double play.
Right.
He's not your closer. He's even misfit a little bit as a setup man. There's just been a lot of games where I'm like, oh, how are the Dodgers doing this again? Like they hit three balls like a combined 60 miles an hour, and there's a guy on first and second, you know.
Also, I should mention, you keep talking about people who are like Clay Holmes, like it's right there in front of you. It's the Adobe mold. Okay. That is perfect. Or the mold of clay, like whatever you want there. you can just use that, but we have to take a break here. We're going to talk more about, guys in the second half that I think are really sneaky. Also, there's been some interesting guys who we've gotten better looks at, rookies that I want to get your opinion on. We're going to talk about all of that after this break. So there were two guys, I think, yesterday alone who showed up with very good changeups. One of them we've seen before, and I'm not going to make any Seinfeld jokes ever about Jason Alexander. He's a very interesting pitcher. And there's another one, Pearson Ohl, who I didn't know existed until like 4 days ago. And that, I actually put out a video watching him because I wanted to watch him myself. I was like, all right, I'll just do this on stream with you guys. And he's a fascinating pitcher to me. But I was kind of curious, just first of all, if you've had any thought about Jason Alexander or Pearson Ohl, if you think that if they were to get more opportunities, if they are going to get them, how would you feel about them?
I believe in Pearson Ohl's changeup a little bit more.
It's so good. You know, it's younger. Such a good changeup.
I mean, he's younger. He's 25. Jason Alexander is 32. He had a better track record of strikeouts in the minor leagues. I guess the question for me is, what's his role? He's really in between starting and relieving. Mm-hmm. And I don't know exactly why. Maybe it's because of opportunity. Maybe it's because I'm not sure he has a breaking ball that is above average, and so maybe they think that's how he's gonna
end up. I mean, it is a 16 to 17 inch sweeper, so he has a lot of bend on that sweeper, and I think it's like a 18 inch or so horizontal break on the sinker, which made me have a comp that you're gonna hate. It's Landon Roop a little bit.
Interesting.
I mean, it's like it's along that same flat plane, right, of the x-axis, essentially, with a lot of sink on the sinker. He throws it.
Doesn't he have a higher arm angle, though?
Is it, though? I mean, like, I'm seeing, like, negatives on both the sinker and the changeup for Vert, which is always just like, oh. That makes me a little interested. What I see, like, with the Astros is they've essentially been showcasing these starters.
Oh, you're talking about Alexander?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I was like, I'm losing my mind because
Pearson Ohl, I'm so sorry. Jeez, oh my gosh. Oh no. Yeah. Oh gosh. Pearson Ohl is very simple. It's amazing changeup. Everything else is whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
It's frustrating from the right side. Having a changeup first is just not generally going to work.
But could he just step in for Paddock and be Paddock?
Well, Paddock has a much better fastball, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's
true. But you need to be a lefty if you have like an amazing changeup and that's it. I'm sorry. Yeah, that I can understand. I got the reaction from Eno, guys.
Oh, yeah. He's got a really low arm angle. Jason Alexander is side armor. Maybe they
so funny.
Figured out how to... I wonder what they figured out. That's what I look at. When I look at somebody who's 32 and like had this wandering, path through the minor leagues, what sticks out for me is more walks recently and more strikeouts. But I also, it just screams journeyman. They would rather have somebody else pitching there.
Well, right. No. So this is what I was getting at. And again, I got to emphasize when I give comps to Eno, generally it's like, and you're like, okay. And I was like, he's not agreeing. Like, well, why not? Hold on.
Because I'm looking at Pearson Holmes.
Yeah, right. I'm like, okay.
This is not Landon Roop.
I'm all right, guys. I'm fine. But Jason Alexander, I see this also with the Astros, right? They don't really want to be starting Jason Alexander. They are likely going to be getting something at the deadline here.
Yeah.
And I could very well see him packaged in a deal because of this, right? Because they wanted to get him in there to be like, hey guys, he can start, look at this, haha. I wouldn't be surprised. I think also the Blue Jays just did the same thing with, say, Easton Lucas going in the doubleheader and saying, all right, he's capable-ish, even though he didn't do well yesterday. I kind of liked what his stuff was. And I do wonder if that might be part of the reason for a lot of these weird starters going right now. So Jason Alexander is certainly someone that I am going to be aware of if he is dealt, not as a overwhelming starter, but just because we've seen this package work before to get a surprising 6 innings, 2-run start. It's interesting. I was like, oh man, you got so much horizontal depth there. Over 30 inches of difference is always fun for me. And it was getting closer to 40 or something like that. I was like, okay. I'm paying attention here. But Pearson Ohl, if you watched the video though of him, right? Of him throwing this changeup?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. And then I'm just like, you feel the anxiety of him being like, well, I can't throw the changeup now. What do I do? And you go, oh man, Pearson. I can't help you. Oh gosh. So there are other guys, of course, that are gonna be opening up and maybe gain some more opportunities. And one of them that for me, I had on the list inside my top 60, then all of a sudden a trade happened and I pushed him all the way down to 99. And then an injury happened and I pushed him back up into my top 60, literally within like 30 minutes of me doing the list on Monday. And then they had a fantastic start that night. And now a lot of people are talking about him. That's Troy Melton. And I'm curious about your take on Troy Melton. I certainly know mine. But I want to know where you're at.
Yeah, we were super excited about him on Rates and Barrels. And I did some comps, and the best comps I could come up with for his fastball, which is pretty interesting. I know why you like him. Huge extension.
Yeah.
he also it's like a little bit of a cut ride situation.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of cuts the four seam a little bit. And so the best comp for his fastball is, you want to guess?
Oh, gosh. Cuts it a little bit.
Extension.
Okay. So hold on a second. He's like, he throws 2 miles per hour or 3 miles per hour harder than Paddock. It's kind of like that 7 feet of extension, but the IVB is 13. I take that back.
Yeah.
Who do we got?
Schwelly.
Oh, that's a great one. Oh my gosh, I hate myself. This is perfect.
Right? Because he cuts it so it doesn't have tail.
Perfect.
But he has the lower slot.
It's
Spencer Schwellenbach's
97.
I don't know that it's the entire arsenal, but it has some similarities to Schwellenbach in that it's a wide arsenal.
It's a wide arsenal that throws strikes.
Yeah, he throws strikes, yeah. We had a lot of that happen for us too on air. We're like, we're talking about how great we think Troy Melton is. And then the Paddock trade happens in real time while we're in on the things, and we're both like, well, I guess that kills, because we had also been talking about how you've been a good streamer this week, because he had two starts this week. And then I was like, oh, well, that kills the second start. There goes the second start. Paddock's just going to take that. And then we go off air and we find out that Olsen is hurt. And so we're like, okay, I guess he gets that start back. But I'm all in on Troy Melton. I don't know exactly where I put him. Let me see. He wasn't in my rankings that I put out before I left. But I could see him having like a 3.8-ish ERA. In fact, you know, I might be as bullish enough to push him to kind of where Reese Olson was for me.
Yeah.
In the high 40s, you know. Ooh. 45, 46.
Man, so that's even higher than I have him. And uh-huh. I'm taking into account of, hey, take chances, make mistakes, get messy, right? And I would think, and generally when we have these conversations, correct me if I'm wrong, I think of me chasing upside, I'm able to do that more than you are in deeper leagues. So the fact that this is a good floor guy.
I hew pretty close to my projections, but the projections that I use are oopsie, and he has a 3.85 ERA projection with a 23% strikeout rate. That's a carbon copy for Reese Olson. In fact, it's a little bit better
ball strikeout club, rate.
Here's a who would you rather, David Peterson? I've got a 3.9 ERA projection on him.
So they are neck and neck in mine. I had essentially my two tiers. One is the one of like, hey, cool, take some fun things. And like, all right, you want something that's going to be around and give you six innings and wins? Fine. And I honestly would go for Troy just because I hate the whip. He's just a whip killer, David Peterson.
Yeah.
And it just drives me up the wall.
He's willing. He doesn't give in. He gives those walks up. Yeah, so
yeah.
I would have him above that. I think he would settle in. If I don't push him as hard as that, then he might settle in around Jack Flaherty, which I have at 50. Yeah.
So you're not a believer in Jack Flaherty?
I have like a 3.85 projection. He has a little bit better strikeout rate projection than Troy Melton, but not really. I mean, Flaherty has fallen off in second halves before. He's very tied to his velo. His velo's not been great this year. Mm-hmm. And everyone knows what he is, and they're going to see him the third time this year. You know what I mean? Like it's not all set up for him to be better than he's been so far this year, I don't think.
So Flaherty was kind of killing it for a while. And then he had this stretch of, I think it was 15 earned runs in two games or something like that. And it kind of brought everything down a bit. It was like a 3-4-5 games stretch or so that was really rough. And then the last two, I think maybe three for Flaherty, have looked a lot more like, hey, cool, I have both my slider and my curveball working now. My fastball is not getting attacked effectively like it was then.
The Cincinnati game where he gave up 8 runs was the third worst velo he's had all year. So,
there you go.
I mean, I think it's really tied to velo, and, just velo doesn't tend to go up over the course of the season. And plus, he used to be, he has this thing where his fastball is much better of 94, and the best velo he's had this year was opening day, 93.6. Since then, he's had one start of a 93.4, two starts of 93.4, and he's in mostly kind of like 93.0 or even below.
Yeah, I did not catch that. I appreciate that giving me a heads up on it. But yeah, Troy Melton to me is that he's a bit of a unicorn in the sense of
I bought
you
him
every league. Rookies come
I mean, him I everywhere. Too. I got him for like 11 bucks in every league.
he's a guy. I mean, look, I remember on the podcast that morning talking about why I liked Cole Reagans back in the day. Mm-hmm. And it was similar. Cole Reagans is better, but it was similar in the sense of I don't normally see guys with velocity, with good approach.
Wide mixes.
Wide like mix.
Stuff likes them. Like almost everything likes them, you know? Like
or strikes, right? That's important about it. You can have a wide mix, but it's like, all right, but this is going to be like a 50% strike rate. Who cares?
Right. But there's no like
breaking ball, right?
He has like 3 fastballs, and he has 3, he has 2 breaking balls, and he has a splitter. Like, I don't know. It's...
Yeah, you got two outs on the splitter, which was just like, dude, yes, sweet.
The prospectors, like, this is actually super rare where the models, the results, and the prospect people like him. Like,
oh yeah. Then like, it's just Fangraphs like the prospect had him, people like, no.
Fangraphs had him 70 overall with a 60 fastball.
Yeah.
They said 45-50 on command, but I think that's been borne out to be maybe a little bit pessimistic.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I was not a 45-50 command guy. I'm a huge fan of him. I think the biggest flaw, or the thing that I'm hoping does not mess him up, is that if he does fail to locate his four-seamer well, it can be hit. It is not, it needs to be elevated with the flat attack angle. The movement on it means that, hey, look, you're not getting vert. If you do leak it over the plate a bit and guys are waiting for that, it will get hit, just like Schwellenbach's was until this year, where then he flanned his attack angle even more and it was ridiculous.
And start throwing it even harder.
And throwing it at 98 or so. And the other aspect is that the slider wasn't so whiffable. You know, it wasn't like I looked at his secondary stuff and I didn't think to myself, oh my gosh, that is one of the best secondaries in the league.
Right? It is actually his only pitch by Stuff Plus that is average. It's like exactly average.
His slider?
Yeah.
Okay. So the cutter, I think, is the interesting one. I'm like, well, let's see what happens there. But that is the part to me that's like,
The slider is basically it's almost a weak gyro. You know,
yeah.
It's a -1.5 with 85. Like 85 is not that great velo for like a gyro, and it's gyro-ish. It's not a sweeper. It's kind of meh, but you know, it's good enough.
It's good. Yeah, it's good enough.
.083 slugging against. Like, come on now.
Well, okay, hold on a second. It is -3, -7. Is what I'm seeing. So like -7 horizontal, -3. Like,
yeah, Savant has -1, -7.
Okay.
Close to gyro. Gyro is like 0-0.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
But it's not a sweeper. Sweeper is like you want 10.
Yeah, 9 to 10, -9 on the horizontal. It's funny. I did not know any of these numbers, guys, last year. And huge thanks to Kyle Bland and the live pitch app that we have for Peel Pro that gives you the whole circle of everything. Every start, I just see the circle plot of movement. And it's gotten me just used to seeing where purple is supposed to be and where blue is supposed to be and all of this. And then attributing it to the numbers.
One of the things that actually bothers me is that they change over time. Like the averages change over time. Like I remember there's a great piece. Harry Pavlidis had benchmarks for pitch types. And that came out in like 2015 or something.
Oh, wait, you put that up on Fangraphs.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, I use that all the time. I had a bookmark. Yeah,
I know.
This is before I knew Eno, by the way, guys. And I was like, oh my gosh, Eno.
I think it's a little old now.
But it was like how I understood what is a good break of something was that.
Yeah.
So good. Yeah, we got to update that. We got to figure out like some good standardization of it all. But what I'm getting at is like the most frustrating thing is a cutter that by all looks of it is a slider, but it's called a cutter because it has like a +6 on the y-axis, right? It's like,
and because he also has another pitch that looks more like a slider.
Well, no, this is I'm not talking about Troy Melton. I'm talking about someone I was even looking at yesterday. It could have been, I think it was Brandon Young, who doesn't have a slider. He has a cutter at 86 and a fastball at 95, 94, and like, why isn't this not a slider? Oh, it's a +6. It's not like he can't get enough drop on it for them to think that it's a slider, right?
Yeah, what is that pitch? What do you think?
That is just bad, is what it is.
Well, Eliezer Hernandez used to throw a pitch that was a slider that had 10 vert, I think.
What?
And it was 80 miles an hour.
What? Yeah. That's the most hand of God slider I've heard.
It's the weirdest thing ever.
That is so strange. I got to look into that. I do want to talk about Brandon Young, though. That was all on my list, too, of just kind of the Orioles are a team that have possibly some openings, as some of those guys might go and they might see more of him. And a few more of these younger arms, and we're going to talk about them after this break. So Brandon Young had this incredible start yesterday, and it was 6 innings, 2 runs against the Jays. 6 strikeouts, I believe. Do you see much there for me? I see like 93, 96 mile per hour fastball that is pretty much doing most of the work. That cutter, as I mentioned, I'm not excited about. He might get more time with the Orioles if they do deal someone. Right now, he's on that rotation. Also, you have Kyle Bradish eventually coming back. How do you feel?
Here's another thing that can help people a little bit. Like the on Savant, when they have the arm angle, now they have the arm angle and they have the movement profile. And you can just actually sort of visualize when you look at the arm angle and you look at the movement profile, you're like, oh, everything runs along his arm angle.
Right.
And you can almost just see his arm angle in the movement.
Yeah. I see that in strike zone plots.
Yeah.
Slider to curveball like this and like in a diagonal. I'm like, oh, okay. He's already from this side going.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's nothing surprising. Mm. There's nothing surprising about Brandon Young. The only thing that he can do is basically try to pump all his pitches up to average and throw them all 20% of the time, which is right now he's throwing the splitter, curve, and cutter all like 15 to 20% of the time. And so he's just basically going to spam you with good command. 105 location plus, though, and really small walk numbers in the minors.
Yeah.
So it's not something that's going to turn into an ace, but it is somebody that could be useful. I would consider him a streamer and fairly interesting.
Yeah, I can see that. I definitely could see that, especially against a bad team. He just throws enough strikes and then he gets through it.
Yeah.
And
I'm a little surprised he did that against the Blue Jays because they've been a good team. But
right. I mean, that game was, that was an interesting one. He actually had both of his walks in the first inning and one of them was getting squeezed.
I'm hoping that the Orioles trade for a pitcher and that, you know, almost in this Tidwell-esque situation that they trade for a pitcher that they just install, because I like Cade Povich is coming back, I guess, at some point.
Oh yeah. There's that too with Bradish. Yeah.
The Grayson news seems to be going in a terrible direction.
Yeah.
So I don't see a lot in the cover. I was never a big Armbruster fan. So there's just not a lot in the cupboard.
Yeah.
So I bet you they could trade for somebody that's better than Young.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, if they wanted to, but the Orioles, I mean, yeah, the Orioles are going for next year and I'm curious.
They're going to trade Ryan O'Hearn and they might get something for
Eflin
him.
And
Mullins.
There's some Mullins, talk about that.
Eflin, Morton. Right. I mean, they'd love to give you two or three of those guys and get a better prospect back, but
sure.
I don't know if any team is going to do that.
Now, I also want to talk about Cam Schlittler, because I'm personally hoping that there's a way for him to stay in this rotation. As it is right now, I see him as the four with Stroman as the five. I don't expect Stroman to be around anymore. Also, after tomorrow, where he's going to make a start for the Yankees, one of three games are going tomorrow, and then it's Luis Gil on Saturday or Sunday.
And don't you think? Even Schlittler has don't you think he has a short lifespan in that rotation, because they could easily trade for somebody.
Well, that's the thing. So then there's two things though. So you have a trade probably coming in for the Yankees in some fashion. That said, you have Will Warren, who they might want to limit in some way. He's been starting regularly. This is his first major season starting every 5 days with the Yankees, right? So you would think that Cam, who had 120 innings last year, would be a good introduction into it as well. You could also think about some piggybacking happening with Luis Gil and Will Warren together, or Cam.
Here's a way that I can tie together Cam Schlittler with a guy that I think will do better in the second half. Just a couple of different themes that we've been having in this.
Yeah.
Cam Schlittler, I think, uses his fastball too much.
Absolutely.
Now, when you throw 98 miles an hour, you fall in love with your fastball. In the minors, you get great results, you know, and it doesn't matter necessarily how good your shape is. In the majors, you can give up a homer on your vaunted 98 mile an hour, 100 mile an hour fastball. Chase Burns, I hope you're listening. And so when you have guys like this, it can take him a moment to realize, you know, I wrote a piece once. It was about Nate Eovaldi. It said, no fastball is too big to hide. And so what I would do if I was Burns and if I was Schlittler is cut 10 to 15 percentage points usage off the fastball. And I think that they have the arsenals otherwise to do it. The question with Burns is, can he command the changeup enough to throw it when he needs maybe he needs a strike. You know what I mean? Like, right. That's why you throw your fastball other than blowing people away. With Schlittler, I don't know. The command generally wasn't good in the first two starts, but in the minors, the walk rates are good. The prospectors put a 40-45 command on him.
Really?
So there is some question if he can command the slider and the curve enough to reduce how much he uses his fastball.
So we saw four walks, I think, in that last start from Schlittler, and yet he had like a 67% strike rate. Like, none of his pitches, I don't think, if I remember correctly, had under a 60% strike rate. And
yeah, but then you're, that's the homers, and that's the using the fastball too much. So.
Right, exactly. So I also, what it is to me is we see this kind of a bit more from rookies and vets are able to make those in at bat adjustments just better because they've been in the game longer, and they'll lose a batter, you hear all the time. That will happen a lot more to rookies where they just can't. You know, they don't know how to get out of that spiral for a moment.
Oh,
so
that's what Birdsong was in. Oh my God. Death spiral. Jeez.
That is the sound of someone who endured it, guys. That isn't just like someone watching it from afar. That is someone who suffered with him.
So what do you think of Slither's command? Do you think it's better? The 92 locations both right now.
I'm surprised that, like, okay. So yes and no. His control is better than the walk rates have been. The slider and the sweeper and the curve find the zone far more than I usually see from a four pitch guy.
All right.
However, please get them
good.
Down.
Those are really good pitches.
Get them down. They're all in the upper half. Yeah. Everything is in the upper half. So when I'm watching this, I'm watching hitters just key in on one location. And that makes it a lot easier. They know to keep their bat lifting it up each time, which means that it's easier then to get to the four seamer.
Oh, that's really interesting. The slider is middle third, and the sweeper is middle third. The only one that stayed down was the curve, and even that one he threw some up and in curve.
I mean, that wasn't that's barely down. So that to me is like, well, hold on, we can actually. That's not that hard of a adjustment. There are a lot of adjustments we talk about when it comes to north south, and you just are not at all using one of them. It really is as simple at times just saying, spike it.
Like, you know, a little lower, you know.
You just got it. It's like you keep hitting the front of the rim. Okay, hit the backboard, you know. And then you'll.
Yeah, like in the bullpen. Yeah. Why don't you spike three and then throw one and see where it goes.
Exactly. So you can eventually get to that. And so that's more.
Throw a couple Louis. Oh, Jesus. Sorry.
Okay.
Stop that right now.
There's a whole thing about that with the Guardians of Joey Cantillo. I was really in on Joey Cantillo, and then I saw his last start, and I'm terrified. You know,
he's poor command.
Well,
he's really poor command.
That start was the worst command I've seen from him. Everything was below a 60% strike rate, and floated changeups and everything. Mm. And also, he was down 2 to 3 ticks, and I'm like,
oh God,
you are hurt.
He's had a big injury history, and he's had up and down.
I haven't heard anything.
Yeah.
No one said a word. Oh, no. I dropped him on a team after that. I was like, I don't think I literally don't think you're okay. Yeah.
Oh, that's it. I do have him in a couple places because he had a 2-start week. The buried in that was, I think Chase Burns is going to be better.
What?
I think he's going to be better.
So, you know, the easiest comp, right, is Hunter Green. And he's just right there in front of us. But the thing is, Hunter Green took time.
That's true. Right? And Hunter Green's fastball might be better by shape a little bit.
Well, right. And they like the similar velocity, but Chase Burns has, it's so interesting of like having a 19 vert and we're like, nah, not good. Like what? Oh, you are so extreme at the top.
Yeah.
But maybe what
you see under the hood, like these 10 strikeout, one walk games. Maybe like he throws the changeup down the middle a little bit and he's just like, oh, okay. I just throw all three pitches kind of down the middle ish. And like,
that's the thing that's more believable to
limit
me
the homers, you know,
about Burns is that I think he can expand his arsenal more so than Hunter Green. I feel like even when he came up, we weren't expecting him just to be two pitch.
With Hunter, I feel like we were like begging him to add pitches and it took forever.
And even like the splitter, I'm like, it exists fine. Maybe there are times, but like It's
he
just
uses that,
went, like,
late in games.
15 strikes with your slider now. That's why you're really good, right?
Yeah, he uses the splitter late in games when he thinks people are sitting on the slider. That's what I've seen in games.
The Mariners have made a trade from the Pirates.
They got a pitcher.
Caleb Ferguson.
Oh, what the? they got Caleb Ferguson? They didn't already have him? Yeah. I just feel like Caleb Ferguson is a very Mariners name. What did they want with
that? Actually, honestly, if you just said Caleb Ferguson was involved in the trade with the Mariners and Pirates, I would have the same reaction.
I wouldn't know. Okay, he's a reliever. They wanted a lefty reliever. Okay. There you go.
Oh, that's amazing. You know, that was from your boy, Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic. So I got to say, I pride myself knowing things from The Athletic before Nino does.
Just yet. This is not how I describe picking up steam.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, we up to what, 16 now? 16 trades? Let's go. Yeah,
let's go.
We're getting there. Mm-hmm. Also in that trade, by the way, to the Giants was Jose Budo, who has had time starting before.
No way.
Yeah. I didn't
they
mention
got
that
more?
Before. It was Budo, Tidwell, and Drew Gilbert for Rodgers.
What?
Yeah.
For Tyler Rodgers? For
Tyler Rodgers.
Does Tyler Rodgers have more years of control or something?
I don't know. He's a reliever.
Drew Gilbert is in that paid?
Outfielder, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just think it's a lot for a reliever, dude.
Oh, no, I would agree. I'm just like, I love your reaction right now. That's why I'm just laughing at. I think it's awesome. Budo to me was something kind of interesting before, but I don't think is much of a needle push at this point.
They've already taken Tyler
like
Rodgers
to me that
off that
not the Yankees, the Mets are getting rid of guys so that they can acquire more. A little bit too.
Tyler Rodgers is a rental.
Hmm.
Wow, that is a good trade for the Giants, I would say.
Let's review the trades between the Giants and the Mets in the past. Carlos Beltran, Zach Wheeler.
Yes, that was a big win for the Mets.
I mean, eventually. It took a while.
It took a while.
It's and
then
they
let him go right before
that trade
he turned
happened?
Into the... Yeah, right when he turned into something good, Brody Van Wagenen said, oh, it was just 3 good months.
Oh my gosh. Well, also he got injured along the way, like 2012 to like 2018 or something like that, 2017. Oh yeah, that was the Bueller and Wheeler summer. Oh my gosh, that was something. taking me back, and Herman Marquez the next year. Okay. I can't even think of another trade with them. With the Mets and Giants. No? Yes? No? Everyone's shouting at us right now. But anyway, going back to just the guys that are now opening up and getting more of these opportunities, right? Another one that I do want to talk about is with, actually, it's funny you mentioned, we were talking about Chase Burns. We were talking about guys who should throw fewer fastballs and understand that. Joe Boyle did that.
JD Davis.
Oh, JD Davis trade.
Oh and the rough trade.
Right.
Which was, they got JD Davis, Carson Seymour, who I like a little bit, and two other guys for Darren Ruff.
The Giants like, all right, we need some trouble. We're in trouble this year. Hey, how you doing, Mets? What's going on?
Angel Pagan for Andres Torres. Yeah.
There you go.
Not but, a long history.
So, Eno, though, yesterday, Joe Boyle, under 40% four-seamer usage and 52% slider usage. With
and not a good game. Sliders.
So against the Yankees, it wasn't a good start overall. Fine, but there is an interesting thing to note there of saying like, oh, hey, you don't have to just try to bully everyone with fastball heat. You can maybe lean into something else that is a more consistent strike provider or just, you know, Boyle took some time to really understand that, hey, hold on a second. I can't just try and force fastballs on everybody and expect success. So
he still has really poor location plus numbers in the year, but the last three starts, last three outings for Boyle, 100 plus location plus on the slider. So just to speak to what you're talking about, I think he's like, maybe I found like I can command the slider a little bit. He's still going to need to improve a little bit on the command, but this new arm angle, the new stuff, the new organization, I'm into him. No way I was going to start him against the Yankees.
Oh, no. He gets the Dodgers and Yankees next as well. I'm not interested. Splinker also hopefully showing up a little bit more in the future. All right. We have just a couple minutes left, really. You know, I want you to tell people your favorites, just unknown name that we really haven't been touching for the first 3 months of the season, who everyone's going to be knowing by September.
Can you go first?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't have one yet.
Damn you. All right, then let me figure it out. Editor, we need your help. Editor.
No. I'll get this quick. I thought you had one because I threw it to you before it started. And I realized that you don't. But all right, I think I have one. I have a joke one. And then I have a real-ish one. Wait.
Okay, I got one.
My brain is scanning. Guys, this is good content, isn't it?
I got one.
You got one, you know.
AJ Blue Ball. He really? Will be traded out of Houston in a deal for maybe a controllable starter, or maybe they kind of need some offense, especially at third base. AJ Blue Ball. Because AJ Blue Ball gives me some Blake Tidwellian feelings about, you know, kind of a pop-up starter that Stuff Plus likes, that the organization has gone to other people instead of. Mm. Like, for some reason, the Mets have not used Tidwell as much as I expected. And I thought, why didn't the Astros go to Blue Ball over Jason Alexander? So maybe they have a different appraisal than I do. That's gold. That's in trade deadline season. That's like right. When you're like, oh, other people like him better than we do. So let's use him. So AJ Blue Ball, I think, will have an opportunity through thick or thin in the second half.
Man, I don't really want to lean in this, but I will. I got it. I got mine. But just to let you know, by the way, Jeter Martinez is going to the Pirates in that trade with Caleb Ferguson. If you know who that is. Okay. No. I don't. I imagine he's named after someone. I don't know who that is. you can just call him Derek. You know, Derek. Okay. The joke one is when Bailey Falter goes to the Rays, it's going to work out. This is going to blow your mind. I think nobody is expecting me to say this name, and I don't really care, because this is what I see. I see Atlanta as a team that goes, wait, we have nobody to start games. And I'm looking at the crew. Okay, they have Carlos Carrasco. Come on. We have Eric Fedde. Come on. However, they have a guy who's now at 7 feet of extension and has a much better cutter this year. That is Joey Wentz. Joey Wentz is getting innings now. He's stretched out until about 5 innings. And I'm kid you not, I needed a reliever in Tout Wars this week. I lost Felix Bautista and I lost Landon Roop like that all of a sudden to fill in my RP spots. And I picked up Joey Wentz for this week. And because I see all of a sudden him at 6.5 extension, now he's at 7 out of nowhere. And he missed a lot more bats recently in the last 2 starts. The cutter is working really well. The curveball is actually working better as well. I don't love the fastball. Don't get me wrong. And I don't think he's an exceptional arm, but there might be all of a sudden value in Joey Wentz that we never thought we were going to get.
It's really weird. I have some unresponded DM on some social media somewhere that's tickling my brain without somebody taunting me about Joey Wentz's location plus or something, and and how he's been terrible. And look at that, 2.92 ERA in July so far. I do not share your optimism for Joey Wentz.
Yeah, I'm shocked, you know, absolutely
going
shocked.
I'm going to go to my last 30 days Stuff Plus, who's up the most in the last 30 days. Mm-hmm. Some interesting names on here. Brad Lord is up 10 points in the last 30 days. But only up to 93 Stuff Plus. So that's not super exciting.
Yeah, he's a righty who has, I think, above average horizontal on his sinker. I think that's what I liked about him. That's it.
Andrew Abbott is up to 98 Stuff Plus, which would be so ironic that just when Stuff Plus starts to like him a little bit, then he goes in the tank.
No. Don't say that.
Don't say
he's that. Been so wonderful for so many. Apparently, Jose Urania, by the way, is supposed to start for the Twins on Monday. I just want to let you guys know that. That is who Roster Resource expects to start for the Twins on Monday, and I just can't.
Well, I think the problem is that they've been using all of their young guys that they were expecting to use, and Festa's hurt. So,
right.
But there, that actually, there are names that I expected they would go to before Urania. So,
it's just that you forgot that Urania still existed, everyone.
True.
It's just, but, you know, remember, kids, if you trust Jose, you're in a boatload of trouble.
But what happened to, was it Connor Prelip? There's a double A lefty with a 28% strikeout rate. Andrew Morris, I think, is a, well, it's not going to tell me. So anyway, I think there are other names. I don't know why. They must just be protecting maybe all their minor leaguers. They just didn't want to bring to the major leagues either to start their clocks or mm-hmm. also because they have a very strict sort of innings. This is what their plan is for this year. And this is where they're going.
I'm going to give one more. And again, I'm really focusing on like the absolute, no one expects this, and Spanish Inquisition starters. Okay. Of a guy who actually last year, around this time, maybe earlier, all of a sudden was part of Fabapalooza. You know, people actually were kind of interested on him. And really has just been so inconsistent, so terrible this year. However, recently has been leaning into his slider more, especially against right-handers, which is not something that I expected him to do. Last two starts, after averaging 3% for the entire year against right-handers with sliders, we've seen 13% and 24%. And that pitch against right-handers has had a 50% swing strike rate and a 19% in the last two. And that is Mitchell Parker, who is actually someone who does have, get this, 7 feet of extension. he also has 17 IVB on the four-seamer, 93 overall, and some of the games that I've seen him have success this year has been when he's actually been able to do Blake Snell blueprint of four seamers up and curveballs down. Hasn't been too consistent with it. However, that slider in my early write-up this year, the top 400 that I do, I said, Mitchell Parker, please throw more sliders to right-handers. It's actually good. The times that you throw it, it is effective. Just didn't do it. And now he's in it for two straight starts. So
I'm not saying go and get, but that could be a walking injury, dude. 61 degree arm angle. I can't even that without wincing.
Oh, 61? That is, wow. What was Kershaw's?
Kershaw's
up there.
Is he?
Right? When I think of like that kind of release from a lefty, I think of Kershaw a bit.
Yeah, 55. So,
oh, still no, that's still six off. That's 55.
Yeah,
no, absolutely not. James Paxton, maybe back in the day, the trebuchet look a bit, but until he lowered his, it was actually good then.
Yeah,
but yeah, Mitchell Parker is someone that I'm going to be following at least the next couple weeks.
You know, I talked to Shamanaya about that arm slot change, and he said that this one feels more normal, and that the reason he was higher over time was because of all his like little league, high school coaches being like, you got to get on top of the ball. You got to get on top of the ball. And so he kept pushing up and up and up. And so maybe that doesn't surprise me that he kept his fastball shape while his slot went down, because the fastball shape may be kind of innate-ish. And then, you know, and somehow a little bit independent of slot in this situation, like he kept his IVB and dropped his arm slot like 20 degrees. That's so it's insane. Like, it is kind of crazy, but when I asked him about that bit, he said, I don't know. I just throw my fastball from here now.
But throw a ball. It's good. I get it.
Yeah. And I asked him, like, did you have to change your pinch mix? He goes, I don't know. Ask my catcher.
I love Shamanaya. I really do. I'm just kind of happy for him, because he's been someone who's dealt with injury for so long. And anytime he would get into some sort of groove, it would just get interrupted. He even had a time in San Francisco where he's like, I'm going to start. And then it just got taken away from him when he would get piggybacked all the time. And for him to not only come to New York and have a regular starting job, but then also explode and have a phenomenal second half, and then to pick up where he was last year is just great. So I'm really happy for him. Hopefully he can cruise into the playoffs for the Mets and you know, show everybody what he's gotten on the national stage.
I wish all you listeners happiness with the trade deadline as it
yes tomorrow. You know, whatever I mean, team did, it was a good exactly move, guys. Right. It was good. It's every
unless it was the best all trades those guys are win for Tyler Rogers.
I didn't realize you didn't know it was Jose Budo and like Drew Gilbert. That was so funny. You just thought it was Blake Tidwell straight up.
I would have taken Tidwell straight up for
him. Yeah, I would too. Probably. That's so funny. But anyway, guys, that's going to do for this episode. Make sure you tune into both of our live shows tomorrow. Eno's starts at 2 p.m. Pacific time, so 5 Eastern, with Rates and Barrels. I'm doing one with Paul Spohr at 4 p.m. Eastern time, 1 p.m. Pacific time. And Eno, outside of that, is there an article, something that you want people to be aware of that's coming out in the near future?
No, I'll write something over the course of tomorrow about players that will get an opportunity after the trade deadline. So the kind of stuff we've been talking about.
Oh, beautiful. Can't wait to read that.
Who's been traded.
Yeah. Wait, who's been traded? Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you can find my stuff, of course, at Pitcher List every single day. If you don't know, I do an SP Roundup where I cover every single start and what I think about that and what, you know, you'll be able to follow those trends that I just talked about with those pitchers the day of that happening. So make sure you go check that out. But that is it. So my name is Nick Pollack. Thank you so much, Eno Saris, for being here. We'll talk about the craft of pitching again next week.